This is Solomon on Blast, the show from Power Talk Live Studio and PowerTalkLive.com, where we apply the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of Solomon to address the confused culture we live in today. It is tax season, so a lot of advertising right now is all about using that tax refund to buy those things that you absolutely need, or at least according to the advertisers. You still have time to file your taxes or file an extension, maybe to give you more time to procrastinate, find some more deductions to reduce the amount of taxes you're going to have to pay to get that bigger refund. You know, I never quite understood it, kind of as a side note, why people really like to use the IRS as their bank to hold on to their money all year and then get it back with no interest in the following year. But, oh, maybe that's another discussion later on. But there really aren't that many deductions available to most people that are employed and don't own their own business. So if you own a home and pay interest, you can deduct that or real estate taxes on it, but that may not be enough to get you over the standard deduction, which for 2015 is $6,300 if you're single or $12,400 if you're married. There's medical expenses as a deduction, but my view on that is you basically have to be dying for that to help out, which isn't going to do you any good next year anyways. The only other deduction that may be of help is the deduction for what the IRS defines as gifts to charity or charitable deductions. The charitable deductions allow you to deduct those donations you make to the nonprofit organizations like United Way or Girl Scouts, but not for the money you spend on those Girl Scout cookies. You get a benefit there, so you can't take a deduction. The other one is donations to churches or any religious organizations. You make that donation basically pre-tax, so the deduction reduces the cost of the donation to you. And if you've ever wondered where that deduction actually came from, it turns out it's been around a long time, almost as long as the income tax itself, and it was actually debated as part of the original income tax in 1913. This part of the law went into effect in 1917, almost 100 years ago. And that same year, 1917, the deduction was created. The top income tax rate had been increased from 15%, which is basically what it is for the most of the middle class today, to 67%. Now, why they did that, they were looking to generate revenue from World War I. And they were concerned that by raising the top income tax rate so significantly, it would deprive those well-off people of all that extra income from which they had been making charitable contributions. So if they had plenty of leftover money and they were making charitable contributions and suddenly your tax rate goes from 15% of your income to two-thirds of your income, you might not have much money left to donate to charity, so they put in place this charitable deduction. But before that, people gave to charities because they wanted to, not because the government was bribing them to do it. People like Andrew Carnegie, Alfred Nobel, most of the early universities that were put in place, Harvard, Yale, they were all established by people willing to give to a cause they believed in, not because they got a tax deduction out of it. They understood that charitable giving could leave a legacy. Even the founders of this country understood that. Benjamin Franklin, when he died in 1790, his will established the Franklin funds in Boston and Philadelphia to lend money to, and the way he defined it was, young married artificers of good character. The fund made its final distribution of capital accumulation in 1991. So over 200 years out of that fund alone. But giving isn't something that the Americans invented. It isn't something that God created for the Jewish. It's something that God actually created for the Jewish people. So, of course, it's something that Solomon's wisdom talks about and from a number of different aspects. A couple of examples, Proverbs 19:17, he who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord and he will pay back what he has given. Proverbs 11:25, the generous soul will be made rich and he who waters will also be watered himself. And the Jewish people in general have done a pretty good job in defining that concept of charity. And there are what they consider to be 8 degrees of charity work, and it's arranged in a descending order. This list comes from something that the Jewish rabbis had put together around the 13th century. So this is the list, starting from what they consider the real true charity down to the lowest level. Number one, the noblest form is the strength of the is to strengthen the hand of an Israelite in need and to give him gift as a loan or to join him in partnership or to find him work that he may not become a public charge and beggar. Next highest is to give in such a way that the giver should not know the recipient and the recipient should not know the donor. Contribution to a charity fund, like we talked about, is similar, but one should not contribute to a fund unless he knows that the official in charge is trustworthy and knows how to manage it. A lower form is when the donor knows the recipient, but the recipient does not know the donor. A still lower form, number four, is when the recipient knows the donor, but the donor does not know to whom he gives. Number five, a still lower form, is to give before being asked. The next lower form, number six, is to give after being asked, but in a sufficiently large amount. The seventh lowest form is to give even what is insufficient, but with a pleasant countenance. The eighth and lowest degree of charity is to give grudgingly after being asked. And I wonder if that's kind of where we've gotten to in our view of charity, mainly maybe because of this whole view on, well, it's got to go to, it's the only way I can get a deduction on my taxes. So we'll come back and we'll discuss this idea of charitable giving right after these breaks.
We all have sorrow.
We're back, Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live. We're talking about charitable giving because obviously Monday coming up is last day for taxes. But, you know, I read through those different levels of charitable giving that the Jewish people had put in place. And I look at that and I say, how can the government ever be a charitable giver? But it seems like that's where a lot of our belief is in the culture today, is that charity comes through what the government can do for through the welfare programs and that kind of stuff. But if you really look at those individual definitions, where does the government fit into that?
Well, as our culture has evolved in the United States, really this goes back to us starting as back to the Massachusetts Bay Colony, where they actually started as a quote-unquote Christian society. This is probably the greatest proof, this dilemma, in that they have always had a difficult time seeing the difference between, the government carrying some kind of benevolent responsibility because of our Christian heritage. And as we secularized, it just be separated into the government picking up the burden of charity. I think it's probably a result of our Christian roots. You know, I know I'm kind of freestyling this out, but yeah. What I mean is, I think what we have today is a result of that. That it was something that, you know, as religion kind of faded into the background, it's still an ethic in the people that goes back to the beginning, that the government should contribute to these sort of things, and it's actually not unbiblical when you look at the Old Testament on how that would work.
Right. And, you know, there was actually a Washington Post article back in 1917 or 1916 when they were first debating this aspect of the tax laws. And the article was pretty pointed, I think. This kind of where I was heading is, it says that most advocates of the new deduction pointed out that weaker charities meant stronger and bigger government. If the government takes all or nearly all of one's disposable income or surplus income, it must undertake the responsibility for spending it. And it must then support all those works of charity and mercy and all the educational and religious works, which in this country have heretofore been supported by private benevolence. And that came out of the Washington Post at that point in time. And I think what they were so worried about has come to pass for most of our culture today, is that that's where it's come from. We have weaker charitable giving because we have a bigger government that people believe is going to take care of the problem instead of looking at it on an individual basis.
Well, you can look at in old world situations where, for example, you know, and this is to their credit, like Catholic Charities in a third world country, where you don't have all that benevolence coming from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the work that organizations like that do and that does, and then there's the, you know, there's another the big evangelical organization escapes me right now on the top of my head, but you know, in those places they contribute a whole lot to some very desperate people, but in the United States, the way we have evolved again, it's almost like it's almost like it doesn't even make sense anymore. Right?
Right.
If someone can get food stamps, and
why should I worry about them?
Yeah, and they run the commercials, and you know, and it's kind of interesting. The ones who are really pushing this idea of starving kids is really not even churches anymore, not in the United States, or Christian charities or religious charities. It's the government pushing those public service announcements about right. all the hungry kids and all this and that. But when you think about this beefy infrastructure of government programs, I mean, it's really hard to believe that, you know, for example, a Christian charity dedicated to donating canned goods is all that relevant. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to believe it.
It is. And I think what it's done is it's allowed people to abdicate their responsibility for personal charity and charitable giving to the organizations that need it to the government. And I don't know, at least in my mind, if there's a way around that, because in some respects, it's almost like the government's too big to overcome what they've been doing from a charitable aspect
right.
that people aren't going to...
So
you know,
if
the
government were suddenly to stop doing that, you might find, and I'm going to give you the devil's advocate point of view here, you might find a lot of... converted conservatives, and you know how they used to say a Republican is basically a Democrat that's been mugged. Well, you can reverse the process there and say you pull all social services and suddenly the burden lies on the people, and you might mm-hmm. find a lot of conservatives that would say that I prefer the government to carry this tab and I'm willing to pay for it.
Right.
You know what I mean? That would switch because we're so used to it.
Yeah. And if you look at those individual levels of charity that I pointed out at the beginning, they are very, very much a personal approach to charitable giving. It's how you view things from your own perspective. It's not, okay, I don't have to worry about this. The government's going to take care of it. And especially when like I said, we've gotten down to the eighth level there, the lowest degree where people are basically giving grudgingly after being asked, and to some respect, that is the whole approach to charitable giving today. You've got all these big organizations that are out there just trying to pull all the money they can from donors, and there's a lot of, I guess what I would say is, professional beggars out there trying to get...
Well, and again, we know the tax burden is huge, and there might be some very important reforms, especially when it comes to people that are able to work, and, you know, that sort of thing. But in principle, I have a hard time believing that people really want the government to completely back out of this. Let me give you an example. Of being involved in a situation in a ministry in New Mexico where one time our church opened up to a program. They said we have a way for families to get for $30 to get $75 worth of groceries or something like at least $60 to $75. So, I mean, okay. We looked at what they had and it was sounded like, wow, that, you know, and they did. They very carefully chose certain items, staples and whatnot, right?
Right. The basics
and,
of life.
And once a month, we allowed our church to be the staging ground and these people would come and they, and so it was fine. People, we had volunteers kind of help process the whole job, the truck and everything. But what happened a few months into it, I don't know, 6 months or so, is when the people who had purchased this this benefit, you know, started complaining about what they got. They started complaining about the brands. They started complaining about how they could get a better deal at Safeway. And, you know, it's just our people are all just volunteering, right?
Uh-huh.
And you start hearing this kind of stuff. And I remember after a while they're saying, you know, there's no gratitude here. It's like if they can go to Safeway, let them go to Safeway, you know?
Right. Why be involved in it?
Why be? And so I think sometimes the church, well-meaning, is trying to be involved in this or trying to do something. But is the need really there? And that's really the question. Is the government really doing a decent job at it, Doug, or are we just complaining?
Well, I think the problem is that there's no personal aspect to it when it comes from the government. So you're never going to resolve the problem. I mean, we know the Bible says, Jesus says in the Bible that the poor you'll have with you always, right?
Right.
So they're there, and they're always going to be there. And we have this, I think, or from a government perspective, you have this view that everybody, that somehow somebody's going to solve the poverty problem and the poor are going to be gone away. And I don't think that's the case. You're never going to have that solution there. And the government's running your dollars through the government in order to get direct aid and whatnot is never going to work. The middleman's always going to take his cut, and the government happens to take a pretty darn big cut in the process of doing that.
Well, yeah, and the Judeo-Christian position really is from the Bible. And you have to start with the Old Testament and then working into how they understood it as people in the New Testament. And that is, you know, the cliche is the position would be teaching people to fish, right?
Right, absolutely.
You don't just give them fish. You teach them how to fish, and you teach them self-sufficiency. And self-sufficiency then will give them an opportunity to prosper. And one day, when they do, they need to turn around and give back, right?
Absolutely.
That's the principle.
Right.
Instead of just being, it's all handouts, it's all handouts, it's all handouts. And there's no question the economics of that, you know, are undeniable. They're just simple numbers, right? You can only bleed out so much before you break the bank. And I think that's the big problem with the government programs. Not that they exist, but how they're so used politically to maneuver to ingratiate people and you know, to basically people to purchase through government programs political position and power. And I think that's the part that most people find disagreeable. It's not the fact that they exist, or that to some degree the American government has not excelled in
but it's the bureaucracy
away to need properly.
And I just want to go on record and say that in reality we are the most charitable country in the world, and the numbers even show it. These numbers were from 2014. Americans gave an estimated $358 billion to charity in 2014. $358 billion. That's a pretty significant amount of money when you consider, you know, the budget and the of the government itself. We're in the, $3 trillion or whatever. Here's almost half a trillion dollars just from individual or not always individuals, but from people giving to charities. So there's a lot of money going into it, but is it always going based on the right approach, I guess I would have to say. And part of that is looking at those levels of giving that the Jewish people pointed out. So, and those numbers have gone up over the last couple of years. When the economy gets better, obviously, people have extra surplus income and they give more.
And, you know, as we speak later, I know you have on here, we're talking about giving to God. You go back to these rules that Moses Maimonides laid out. You know, there's reasons why certain cultures or certain clans or certain families excel financially, right?
Yeah.
It's not just that they've stolen a bigger piece of the pie than they deserve. There are principles in play, and those principles produce. And when people apply themselves to this seriously, for the most part, generation after generation, and you're going to see financial, if you know, you take that part of your life seriously, you're going to see financial breakthrough. And that's what, and Maimonides was just pointing out, basically, that giving is the foundation of that. Charitable giving is foundational to all forms of financial prosperity, the long-term version of it.
Right.
You know, you can have fast money, and you can lose money fast as well.
Right.
And every one of your kids can be a drug addict, you know, and you know, you can do that too.
But the interesting part about the highest level, the noblest form, as he says, is actually to join them in partnership or to find them work. I mean, their approach to life was if they saw somebody and they knew that person's environment, that they would actually fund their business, join them in a business to make sure that they were successful. And like it says, so he doesn't become a public charge and beggar. And I think at the personal level, you can do that much better than you can at the government level, rather than, you know, I mean, they've tried to do it before where you can't get welfare unless you've gone out and searched for your job and that kind of stuff. But it's interesting to note that they were willing to do that when this was put together, like I said, back in the 1200s and the 13th century. So this has been a concept for them for hundreds of years. So we'll come back with more of this discussion after we take a couple of quick breaks here on Power Talk Live, Solomon on Blast. We'll be right back. Blast here on Power Talk Live, and we're talking about charitable giving. You know, we kind of discussed the government side of it. Giving to the government is one aspect of how we've kind of maybe distorted the real approach to charitable giving. The other aspect of it is, I think, giving to man. And Solomon says in Proverbs 25, he says, whoever falsely boast of giving is like clouds and wind without rain. Basically, you can say you're charitable and there's nothing that really comes out of it and there is no charity involved. So is that kind of the aspect of where we're at in our confused culture? And I mean, I'll be honest, I'll kind of give you my viewpoint of it before I became a Christian. And my viewpoint was, what was the least amount I could give in order to get what I needed? And the example is, my kids went to Catholic school, private Catholic school, and they had a requirement that if you wanted to get the Catholic tuition rate, that you had to give at least, and I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was around $750. So that's what I gave to get the benefit for the Catholic tuition. If you didn't give whatever it was, then you had to pay the non-Catholic tuition.
So
which
you
was
were a $750 Catholic.
Absolutely. That's what the requirement was. That's what I gave. To me, it was, okay, a pure economic transaction. If I can save this amount of money on tuition, then that's all I'm going to give, whatever the requirement is. So there was no real charitable giving. It was a giving to get viewpoint. It was falsely giving with no real benefit to anybody other than myself. And it wasn't until, like I say, I became a Christian that I really understood the difference between just giving to get and giving for charitable purposes. And for me, and I,
Power Talk Radio.
I can't understand it, I guess, from other people's viewpoints, but there was a point in time, probably.
Taking calls?
Sure.
Yeah, we are taking calls.
There was a point in time where I want to say a couple months after I got saved that something clicked in my head, and it said, tithing is a requirement. And from that point forward, I just understood it, and I apply it. Now, none of this that we're talking about, I'm not really considering tithing. I'm just talking about the other half of it, which is the charitable giving. Because if you look at those eight items that Moses laid out there, there is no discussion with tithing. And I think the Jewish viewpoint is that's a given. This is separate from that, and that is charitable giving. So in my mind, it's like the tithe, the 10%, is just a given. There's no discussion. We don't even have to talk about it. That's just it. Now you go beyond that and start talking about charitable giving. So that to me was a revelation that there is a difference.
Well, yes, I think it's connected just to the revelation that charitable giving, again, is foundational to financial prosperity, that they go together. Mm-hmm. That you want, if you want one, you have to embrace the other. And as a people, I think they're unabashedly saying this is God's program, right? He showed this to us through the first Moses. He showed this to us. And if we just follow it, he's going to prove how true it is, right?
Right.
I like the way Jesus put it, wisdom is proved right by her children. So the results of it should tell you that this is effective, right?
Right, and that's
the thing that I think we're bringing up here, is that charitable giving and financial prosperity are, in fact, related. It is not something invented by a TV evangelist. That's the way it's presented. Like, that's all. That.
Right. In American culture, it's like, no, those guys just want your money.
Yeah, they're telling you something. And no question, there's some people that manipulate that.
And that was my viewpoint before I was.
But still, it's still true. It still is the principle.
Hey, guys, we've got a caller, Dave. He's on line one. Dave, he has a question about tithing in this economic situation we're in now.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Dave. But like I kind of explained real quick there, this discussion really isn't about tithing. There is a separate, these two are separate and distinct, tithing and charitable deduction or charitable giving. So, but go ahead.
Well, I was, you're probably familiar with hyperinflation. And, when you're dealing with hyperinflation, making any charitable giving is basically the same concept as tithing. You can only give away what you can. If you look at I'm calling you from San Francisco, where the price of a studio is closing in on like $4,000 a month, and you've got to be making $125 a year just to be able to rent a studio.
Right.
I mean, it's so stupid. You've got famous people who are homeless out here now, and that's hyperinflation. Pre-World War II, they had the wheelbarrows full of money to buy a loaf of bread. And
in this country, but over in Europe, yeah, they did.
Yeah, it's starting to get that way. And I think anybody in their right mind contends that it's organized crime that's behind it. You know,
the federal government?
Well, the federal government's been taken over by organized crime.
Well, I think it is organized crime now.
It wasn't to begin with.
No, it wasn't. But I think that's kind of the point we made at the first part of this, is that the government has taken over this whole concept of charitable giving and has hijacked it. And now people don't give because they expect the government to do so. And then they claim that they are giving when in reality they aren't. And that's this part that we're talking about. It's like, okay, yeah, there's a lot of false boasting about giving. And my example is the recent comment from Hillary Clinton when she just came out and said her tax returns are out there on their website from 2007 to 2014. And her own words that she put out there on her website that she's paid, up in the words of 36% of her income in taxes. She's bragging about the fact that she's, over the last 7 years, her and Bill have given over $14 million to charities. And I thought, okay, maybe that's a valid statement. And given that they do have kind of a background, both of them, with regards to the church and being Christian, I thought, okay, they understand this aspect of it. But I went out and looked. So from 2007 to 2014, they did give roughly about $14.7 million, which I thought, wow, that's great. Until you break it down, and it turns out of that $14.7 million, and I'm just rough numbers here. I don't remember. Let me see if I had it on my list here. Oh, yeah, here we go. Out of the I totaled it up. $135,450 went to charities. $13,769,000 went to the Clinton Family Foundation.
Right.
So is that really charitable giving if you're putting it into your own family foundation?
Well, that's what the Rockefellers been doing for years, in the, the Trumps probably, and the...
Gates, Buffett, they're all doing the same thing.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and in fact, Bill Gates has been doing that. And one of the horrors of what Bill Gates is doing, he has these old broken-down computers. There are some of them that have been returned because they were defective. He has piles of computers, right? And so they were donating these computers to schools, broken computers. And he was getting a tax write-off for donating a broken piece of crap to to a school, and then running around as if he's a saint. And it turns out that then you get into this kind of snobbishness about running a computer, and somebody can't get it to work right. Well, it turns out it's broken. So they snob as if, you're just not smart enough to run a broken computer. Wait a minute, that's one of the and then they send them over to Africa, and it turns out not only do they have different electricity and broken computers, but then they end up hazardous waste dumps.
Yeah.
And they got these kids picking through the computer parts, getting just poisoning themselves with the guts of them. And it's created. He's probably a bigger mass murderer than King Leopold and Hitler. I mean, those guys are rapacious. That's, you're right about, keeping your eye on the charities, because I'm in my 50s, and I remember, the 70s, 80s, 90s, the United Way was always being busted for hogging like 85% of the money for
right.
their, top-down executives,
yep.
and like 5 to 15% would end up in the hands of as an actual charity. And it turns out, those old boys were more like organized crime.
And that's why I think, that's kind of why I brought this whole subject up, was the fact that, it needs to get back to a personal level, and having these large either foundations that are doing things like this or the government managing it, it really boils down to what Solomon says, that it's falsely boasting of giving because there's nothing coming out of it. The clouds
sure.
and the wind without rain aspect to it.
Well, I like that. In a similar vein, you remember Moses had the, or was it, no, maybe it was Jesus, vanity, vanity, and all is vanity and vexation of the spirit. So So it's, you know, they're showing off until it collapses.
I think that's Solomon in Ecclesiastes, actually, if I remember right.
Oh, is that? So that was one of his quotes?
I think so.
Okay.
He was always talking about vanity, vanity, all is vanity.
Yeah, so, yeah, and it's, yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, you're lucky enough to be working with a small station or small network, but, you know, this huge network called Clear Channel,
yep,
and they're now called iHeart. They changed their name to iHeart. Turns out those old boys are deep bankrupt. They owed $21 billion, and they were being given 60 days to pay off, some huge amount. And they're not likely to pay it off. And the trouble with it is that when Clear Channel was growing and expanding and growing and expanding, they were using fake collateral to do it. They were puffing up the collateral of one to justify their buying the next one and the next one and the next one, but their ad revenues have never paid off.
Yeah.
And part of it is because they are not job creators, they're colony economics.
Yeah.
They hog all the money back to the corporate headquarters, and in the old days of radio, you know, if you were going through bad economic times, the local radio station could actually improve the economy by itself by bartering ads.
Right.
But with this...
Speaking of ads, we got to take a break,
you got to jump to one, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that they could barter an ad and that would stimulate the local economy. But now Clear Channel sucks it to the headquarters right away, and they never gets in town. Hey, well, good week.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate your input.
Sure.
We'll come back with the last segment of Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live.
Dave is articulate. He's awesome.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Standing by somebody when they need that help. We're back here with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live. You know, and I understand what Dave was saying, but part of this viewpoint that I think I'm trying to get across is that there's a lot of this false giving going on out there. And I'm not just picking on Hillary, although it's not, you know, she makes such a big target out of herself to come out on her website and make a big deal about $14 million in donations, and then you find out that 99% of that is to their own Clinton Family Foundation, doesn't, for me, define real charitable giving, because basically you're just doing it for a tax shelter is what it boils down to. But she's not the only one. I mean, those same kind of things have been going on across the board. Donald Trump, Dave made some comment there about how the different charities were kind of behind the scenes doing things. Well, Donald Trump's the same way. He came out with a whole list of his campaign, sent out a list of, I don't know, it was like 4,000 pages of his charitable giving. Well, most of it was free golf rounds at different resorts and that kind of thing. So again, it's more of a, it's not just one side of the fence or the other when it comes to the political aspect. They do it to improve their position, but they don't really do real giving. It's like I say, like Solomon
said. The irony of those foundations is the grandchildren oftentimes dedicate those funds to causes that the guy who made the money would roll over in his grave.
Right.
About, you know?
Right.
And all you have to do is watch any PBS special and
right.
You see like the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and I doubt the original people with those names would have been like really thrilled about some of those ideas. But a lot of it is that's how it happens, right? You put it into a shelter, and so maybe that's par for the course. Maybe that's why the money went there, because there were other motives associated with that, those gifts in the first place. You know, these people always get all this credit. Sometimes you see headlines, and there are certain people that are treated, I think, with kid gloves, which would certainly be Bill Gates, you know, because he owns MSN.com. And it's kind of like Churchill said, history will be kind to me, for I intend to write it. So if you want the news to be kind to you, then own
some station some that stations. Produces it. Exactly.
Exactly. So, you know, headlines, Bill and Melanie Gates give $1 million to charity. And then there's some euphemistic name of this organization about helping the world in peace. And then you read through it and you realize, oh, man, this is just gun legislation money, you know. And you realize it's a political position they're taking here. And it's very little to do with, you know, just charitable giving so people can, you know, dig wells and have places to live, you know.
Because there really was a specific reason that the Jewish people were given these rules regarding charitable giving, and that was to help the poor, right? That really, I think, was the core piece of it. The widow, the orphan, and the poor were what continually get pointed out and throughout all of the different proverbs that Solomon...
The historian, Paul Johnson, he kind of makes your point. He paints a very dramatic picture in his book, A History of the Jews. He talks about... how all those immigrants went into New York City at the turn of the century, you know, the 19th to 20th century. And he describes the drama of it all, because the tradition of most of the early American Jewish people was Sephardic. It was not Ashkenazi, which is the other. That flipped later in American history. And they were well-established people from strong family lines, a lot of business, a lot of prosperity. And so all of a sudden, these unwashed masses start coming in from Eastern Europe, people that they didn't even hardly culturally identify with. And there was a real serious debate going on within the community whether they were even responsible to them, being that they're from a completely different tradition and a different part of the world. And the famous poem by Emma Lazarus, that's, you know, there's a piece of it on the Statue of Liberty, the Great Colossus, or whatever that poem was called, you know, give me your poor, your huddle, and all that. That wasn't written for the general world. Actually, that poem originally was written as an answer to this question: should we be responsible? Are we responsible to help our fellow Russian, Lithuanian, Eastern European Jewish brother, or do we even have to acknowledge them? And the decision obviously was made to support. And so they, as Maimonides said, you give your fellow Israelite a hand. And so they began to undergird that and help them assimilate into the American culture, jobs, factories. I'm not saying it was all peaches and cream, but, you know, there was definitely a hand that was put out based on the principles that you have, you know, spoken of today and laid out. They actually applied those.
And Maimonides,
to these immigrants, and said, we will help them.
Yeah, and I think part of this writing of Maimonides was that they had a viewpoint that, and this is going to go against all the secular world view, but God created everything, including man. So if God created everything, all men are brothers, regardless of their background or which sect they're from. And if everybody's a brother, then everybody is entitled to some portion of the inheritance of the estate. And so as individuals, we're obligated to go help our brothers, because if somebody really is our brother, we'd obviously help them, right? A real brother, one born to the same mother and father. So that was kind of their overall viewpoint, was God owns everything. He's created everything. People are all brothers, so we are obligated to help each other in this environment. And, you know, we bring it around, as always, back to the aspect that it's one greater than Solomon who has the ultimate wisdom associated with it, and that really is giving to God. And Jesus sat down and talked about the fact that it really isn't the size of the gift that matters, but it's the size of the sacrifice, he says in Mark 12 about the widow's offering. He sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, the poor widow has put more into the treasury than all of the others." And I think that's the real aspect of charitable giving, is it's not how big the gift is and how many people get help, but it's really how much of a sacrifice is it to us. And I think that's the wisdom that Jesus presents, that maybe it isn't totally covered by what Solomon's talking about. It goes beyond that aspect of it. So we're almost done here for this week on Solomon on Blast. We appreciate all everybody listening, and we'll be back next week. Until then, keep thinking wisely.